the middle. Delzato made the pass. It's tipped in. And the Rangers come right back with Hedman. And the Richards, he scores! Marion Gaborik, one on three, takes a shot that was blocked. There's Puck, Delzato scores! Delzato, 2-0 Rangers! To Brooks Light into the middle. Roman Hamelik joins the rush. Shoots, he scores! And the Capitals come right back with one of their own as Roman Hamelik joined the rush. And it's a 2-1 game with 9:17 to go. Alexander Steven, Brooks Light is there. Rangers keep the puck on the boards. They're going to hang on and win it. The Rangers are going to the Eastern Conference Final.
Well, there it is, Merrick. The bitter end. The bitter end of not only the Washington Capitals, sir, but of Dale Hunter hockey, it turns out.
Well, it's interesting, and that's Lara's theme from Dr. Zhivago, a movie, well, actually a book, originally by Boris Pasternak, exploring the themes of loneliness, the struggle of the individual in the face of revolution. And isn't that appropriate considering everything that went down on the weekend with the Rangers and the Washington Capitals, specifically Alexander Ovechkin, and more specifically Dale Hunter, who has taken his red tie wish and gone back to the London Knights of the Ontario Hockey League. Actually, London Knights were in the MasterCard Memorial Cup, one of four teams long, which went against St. John and the Edmonton Oil Kings.
Yes. Nice branding, by the way. Nice branding. I appreciate it being
I work at Sportsnet. We're the home. We're the home of the MasterCard Memorial Cup, you see. I just applied for a MasterCard today, as a matter of fact. Look at that. Look at me go.
So what's more surprising about Dale Hunter, before we get to Game 7, the big news, of course, today is Dale Hunter stepping down as Capitals coach. What's more surprising, the fact that Hunter is one and done with the Capitals, or the fact that as of the broadcasting of this podcast, not one person in the Canadian media has pinned this on Ovechkin?
Ooh, that's a great point, because it seems as if he really snapped to attention. And much like Jacques Lemaire was the first to get through to Ilya Kovalchuk, Dale Hunter was the first to get through to this Russian hockey player. And there never seemed to be, you know, unlike, you know, all throughout the regular season, this season specifically, last season as well, you saw the sniping and the backbiting and the rolling of the eyes between Alexander Ovechkin and Bruce Boudreau. But this time Ovechkin did it all. He said all the right things. He had the right body language. He did all the right things. He never complained about lack of ice time. Production was still good from Alexander Ovechkin. He was turning into, in a lot of ways, which, didn't you get the feeling that under Dale Hunter, he was turning into the new Kovalchuk? Like everything, you know, Kovalchuk had, you know, a few years on him to develop as a hockey player. Don't you kind of get the feeling that that is now where Alexander Ovechkin is heading? So I don't think that, no one really painted the Hunter versus Ovechkin narrative other than the first time that he sat him down. But instead of getting boo-boo face about it, Alexander Ovechkin said all the right things, didn't he?
Well, that's what's so weird about this whole thing, right? Like, the Capitals, George McPhee said today that this was not a shock. This was not unexpected. You know, this is something that they kind of anticipated. Hunter told the Capitals in a meeting this morning, on Monday morning, that he was not coming back. It almost, remember, you know how like, okay, let me frame it this way.
All right.
It reminds me of the movie E.T. Dale Hunter dropped in out of nowhere. He comes in. He affects everybody's lives in a dramatic way. Some people with walkie-talkies try to chase him off and kill him or capture him and study him. And then he goes back to his home world, never to be seen again. But we're all changed because of him for the better. It's as if it was a dream that Dale Hunter came and coached the Washington Capitals. And I think you're right. Like, from Ovechkin to Backstrom to Alsner and Carlson to Brooks, like, not only do these guys have a better appreciation for how to win in the playoffs and the sacrifice that it takes both in body and mind to do this sort of thing, but I think from a temperament standpoint, from a psychological standpoint, Hunter showed them that you can't panic And that all those other times when adversity would hit and the snowball would roll down the hill and things would get out of hand for the Capitals, it didn't happen this time. And I think that's a credit to Dale Hunter, and to a man, the Capitals would say that's a credit to Dale Hunter. So if nothing else, a 6 month or whatever it's been, learning experience for this team, even if Hunter is now done with the National Hockey League as a head coach.
George McPhee brought in a mercenary, right? Like, he kind of brought in a hitman here. This is what we need to do in 6 months, guys. Here's the project. It was like the A-team in a lot of ways, and he and Dale Hunter was George. Actually, no, George McPhee would have been George Peppard in this one. But he brought him in for one specific reason, and no one was shocked. George McPhee himself, you know, GM said he wasn't shocked either, because he was just kind of brought in as a rental hitman, as a rental mercenary to do one thing to the Washington Capitals and with the Washington Capitals, not unlike what Jacques Lemaire did with the New Jersey Devils. My question is, and it's so rare, and we did see this with Jacques Lemaire a couple of times, once with the Habs and once again with the New Jersey Devils. When do coaches walk away? This is not how it happened. You get fired. You don't name me coaches that leave on their own terms. I mean, it is the rarest creature in the NHL, the coach that leaves on his terms. It doesn't happen. You get fired. That's the way it works.
It really is kind of unprecedented, right?
That in a lot of ways, totally.
Some modicum of success and then just walk away afterwards because he's got another gig. Well, it goes to show two things, I think, about Dale Hunter that we've talked about in the show before. One, the fact that he took the gig with a one-year contract to keep a toe dipped back in the London pond. Without question, this was on his mind. Without question, this was the escape hatch that he put in place, and he wound up using it. So all the speculation about him being lame duck, one and done, was accurate. And like I've said about Hunter throughout this playoff run for the Capitals, you can be brazen about your system, you can be brazen about ice time, you can be brazen about utilizing players that make $9.6 million a season to score goals for 15 minutes a night. You can be brazen about all this stuff if you know it's not going to matter for the subsequent 82 games in 2012-2013, barring the lockout.
True.
He approached this thing balls out, balls to the wall, without a single care about ego or politics or repercussions. And I think that's one of the reasons the Capitals did what they did in the postseason. What he did, both from a personnel standpoint and from a system standpoint, cannot sustain itself for 82 games. It could barely sustain itself through 41 home games when you have people in Washington paying money to see Alexander Ovechkin score goals and he's playing 15 minutes a night. So Hunter knows all this. He takes it into account. He says nice things about going home because he misses his family, whatever. But he knows that this can't sustain itself for 82 games, and he ejected.
And let's not forget, too, that he makes more money as the coach, general manager, owner of the London Knights than he would as the head coach of the Washington Capitals. So there is that little picadillo here to consider at the same time. You know what he kind of did? He was kind of like J.D. Salinger. He came in, he wrote Catcher in the Rye, and then he was out. And Ovechkin was like his little Holden Caulfield, but instead of a red hat, it was a red tie that Dale Hunter wore. That's. And my question now becomes of the Washington Capitals, because the attention now, you like that one? The attention now just turns.
I don't think losing in the semifinals in a game seven is Catcher in the Rye, sir.
Based on expectations before when they weren't even going to make the playoffs, that was Catcher in the Rye, bud. That was Catcher in the Rye, dude. Okay, so the question now becomes, what kind of coach should they go to? Like, how much of a foundation here did Dale Hunter lay for the other coach, for the next coach, whether it's, I don't know, take your pick, Ron Wilson seems to be the flavor of the internet today. Paul Maurice's name has been bandied about, Craig McTavish, and we'll see what the fallout is after the playoffs when coaches start to drop. I wonder whether whether it'll be this style of Washington Capitals that we see next season, or do they just go back to being the run and gun rock and roll guys?
I don't know if they could ever go back to being the run and gun rock and roll guys, but I think what they need is, and again, not to draw a parallel to the Devils again with the Kovalchuk Ovechkin thing, but they need a Pete DeBoer. They need a guy who can split the difference between a team that can harass you and play great offensively and also cover their own ass defensively. Now, the hope is that Dale Hunter came in, cracked skulls, got through to these guys, taught them how to win in the playoffs, and now you bring somebody in who can take that circuitry, apply some other circuitry, and come up with a winning formula. But who does that? Now, McTavish to me is a real interesting option. So is Guy Carboneau, who our buddy Japer has mentioned. Like, mm-hmm. Those are cats that have the respect of players by virtue of name recognition, by virtue of accomplishments, even if they've not won a Stanley Cup as a coach. That's the kind of guy they got to bring in. They need the prestige guy now. You know what I mean? Like, they had Boudreau, who was the friend of the players. They had the Dale Hunter, the icon of the franchise, who comes in, gets the respect of some players, but everybody's got to listen to him because he's the head coach. Now you need the guy, the prestige guy, the guy with the ring, maybe. They like I said today on Puck Daddy, they need their Quenneville, Laviolette, Tortorella type, but all those guys have games is the problem.
They do, and you know, there was that brief window we saw where Joel Quenneville's job may have been in jeopardy, before he won the power play with Michael Haviland, and so Quenneville ends up staying, but he would have been the ideal coach. I think we talked about this on the podcast before. If you could pick the one guy in the NHL, one that's, you know, has the Stanley Cup ring, has the pedigree, played in the National Hockey League, can get furious at times, as we've seen before, Quenneville really would have been the perfect guy. I'm not sure of all the available candidates out there right now. And again, we'll see who falls at the end of the season. I don't know what the right guy is out there right now, to be honest with you.
You don't like yourself a little Paul Maurice action?
I do like Paul Maurice. I just don't know that I like him with a team that's as superstar laden as the
problem.
Washington Capitals are.
There's a public perception about this team now because Boudreau finally threw up his hands and said, I'm done. I'm going to try to start scratching guys. That didn't work. They chased him out of town. Hunter comes in as the ultimate disciplinarian. I mean, as far as limiting ice time, scratching guys, not even telling them why they were scratched. I mean, there needs to be some happy medium
mercenary
between friend of the players and Dale Hunter's psycho coach. And I don't know who that guy is personally.
You know who it is?
You know
who it is? He's employed right now. And it's actually, interestingly enough, the guy they wanted initially when they thought about getting rid of Bruce Boudreau. It's Kirk Muller. Don't you think?
And a tactician as well.
Yeah. Brilliant tactician. And, you know, can be nice guy Eddie and can be also, you know, shake your fist coach. I mean, he's won the Stanley Cup, played in the NHL, respected the players. Now, he hasn't won the Stanley Cup at the NHL level as a head coach, but as far as putting together systems and strategies that are successful in the postseason, see Montreal Canadiens eliminating the Penguins and the, Washington Capitals.
That was such a dream of mine that he comes walking in. Maybe he's wearing spurs in this example, and they're clanging on the ground as he walks in.
Got a toothpick.
And he just goes, hey, guys, my name's Kirk Muller. I'm the one who figured out how to beat you, and I'm here to save your season. Cut to black.
As the camera goes tight shot on Alexander Ovechkin, and he does one of those shaggy moments. Zoink, Scoob!
All right, so there's the Hunter thing. I think we both agree veteran coach would be the way to go. Now watch them go hire Mike Haviland. Game 7 against the Rangers, a valiant effort, but you know what, dude? We keep coming back to the same theme with the Rangers, which is this. Brad Richards was worth the money.
Yep. He wasn't in 82 games, but that's okay. You know what? Jimmy Dolan, Glenn Sather, the paycheck you kind of choke on during the season, but come playoff time, you are only too happy to say, yeah, we stroked some large checks for Brad Richards, and he's paying off right now. Like we said on Friday, I don't think that Brad Richards would have let his team lose that game.
Right.
I don't think that there was any part of Brad Richards that would allow the Rangers to lose that game at all.
And, like, we could quibble about the Conn Smythe watch. I mean, I know there's people out there that probably think that Henrik Lundqvist should be ahead of Richards just because where would the Rangers be without Lundqvist? Dude, he's got the Rangers have 8 wins. He has points in 6 of them, and they're not bullshit points. It's like the game-tying goal in Game 5, the setting up the game-winning goal in the triple OT game, scoring the first goal in Game 7 and putting Holtby on the defense. I mean, it's been amazing to watch this guy do what you expect a former Conn Smythe winner to do. And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion this postseason, especially insofar as what Danny Briere did for the Flyers for through 2 rounds, about whether clutch is a thing or, you know, can you quantify clutch? Does clutch exist? I don't know how anybody looks at Brad Richards and doesn't think that clutch doesn't exist.
And you can say the same thing, I think, about another Richards, not related, but Mike Richards with the Los Angeles Kings. Now, Brad Richards is on an entirely different plane still than Mike Richards, going back to 2004 and he won the Conn Smythe Trophy. And I don't think that Brad Richards is as good a player as he was back in 2004, obviously, but the more you see him in these playoffs, don't you say he's damn close?
Yeah.
Like, that performance in 2004 was one for the ages. He was redonk. What a performance in 2004. He's not that far off, is he?
No, he's not.
Not that far off at all.
Coming up later in the program, we'll talk to Dave Lozo of NHL.com, our good friend, a man who's funnier than both of us, quite frankly.
Truth.
About the Rangers and the Devils, or as I like to call it,
sweet, sweet revenge for 1994. Coming your way. You know it. You know it, New York. You know
think?
What's coming.
Here's the beautiful thing about the Devils and Rangers, if I may speak for a moment
they
as a
flipped.
Devils fan.
They flipped. They flipped.
No. Not beyond the fact that the Devils are the most entertaining team left in the playoffs. The team that wants to play offense and hopes that the Rangers don't create a swamp-like slog of a series to crap on the artistry of our offensive talent. What we hope for out of this series is this, and here's what we know as Devils fans. This is a chance to gain revenge for 1994, to prevent the New York Rangers from advancing to the Stanley Cup Final, much like the Rangers prevented the Devils from doing the same thing 18 years ago. But here's the beautiful part. If the Devils win, why, we've exorcised that demon. We hold one over the heads of Rangers fans. If the Rangers eliminate the Devils in this conference final, well, why wouldn't they? They're the top seed. They have the best goaltender in the world. And this is the second time now that they've done this to the franchise. I guess we're just ass out of luck when it comes to playing the Rangers. But were it to go the other way, were the Devils to win this series, my oh my, that certainly would be a card we could play in an argument, wouldn't it?
The sweetest revenge for you because you get to stick it to the Philadelphia Flyers fans' wish. And even more so, being able to stick it to the New York Rangers. I feel bad for Sarah because I know there'd be a lot of reconstruction work that needs to be done on your house as they widen the door frames so you can fit your head through it for the rest of the summer.
Listen, yeah. Again, somebody asked me again this morning about the fan journalist thing. Look, I've been writing about hockey since before.
Whatever.
Started in 2008. My loyalty is around my sleeve. You know where I stand. Judge the work, what have you. But if we can't have a little fun in the next 2 weeks, and if I'm going to get this bullshit of nice impartiality, blah, blah, blah. Look, just because I'm covering game three and wearing my Scott Stevens jersey underneath my suit does not mean that I'm in. I have a bias.
How do you fit a jersey underneath a suit?
You wear a baggy dress shirt. I've been doing it for years. Anyway, with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
Long ass.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sedin is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
That's right, Lozo coming up. Question of the day. We have a Final Four.
We do.
What would you call this Final Four? If the Final Four in the NCAA hockey tournament is the Frozen Four, what on earth would you call this Final Four if you had to give a name to it? With the Devils, Rangers, Coyotes, and Kings. For example, I call it New York and everyone else. That would be my name for the Final Four.
New York and everyone, or New Jersey and everyone else from your perspective?
No, New York, you can call it, listen, when it comes to East Coast bias, the tri-state area can band together, come together, join together like the Lions of Voltron, and act like pricks towards the left coast. So it'd be New York and everyone else would be my name for the Final Four. But if you've got a better name, puckdaddyblog@yahoo.com, @Wyshynski, @JeffMerrick on Twitter, #MVSW.
And here's one of them. Here's a good one. Murray Robb submits this one on Twitter. For question of the day, the Bridgestone Conference Finals brought to you by Allstate, a Pepsi production. #marketing for the win. Yeah, that's right. And in many people's eyes, the clouds. In many people's heavens, the clouds have billboards, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, you know, I know that there can be excessive billboarding done around the National Hockey League. I'll give Gary Bettman credit for a number of things. But one of the things, he has always resisted when anyone has brought up the idea of sponsoring the Stanley Cup itself. And you know that's been pitched. And you know it takes
sure.
a hell of a check. And he's been the one resisting more than anybody else. He's always wanted to keep that one sacred.
Yes, so sacred. So sacred.
He has.
Now, the playoff beard, not sacred. Everybody's got a piece of the playoff beard now. But,
I killed that one. Sacred. Yeah, that's now,
here's the thing. So let's talk about the and the rest of this postseason. The Los Angeles Kings and the Phoenix Coyotes. God damn, that was a good performance out of LA in game one, wasn't it?
And a good performance out of Mike Smith, too. You know, we talked about Game 6, Rangers, Capitals, how, the Rangers just squandered a really good performance by Henrik Lundqvist. Can you say the same thing about Mike Smith last night?
He was awesome last night. For those that might have missed the game,
what?
The Kings pushed 90 pucks towards Mike Smith. Some of them were blocked, some of them missed, but they pushed 90 pucks at the dude in game one.
They worked hard.
It was wave after wave of player. Listen, man, I picked the Coyotes in the series in 6, which of course is the kiss of death because all my predictions are terrible this postseason. But now I feel like a damn fool. The Kings didn't miss a beat in that. One game. You watch Dave Tippett in that post-game press conference, you saw a man who just saw his team embarrassed, outplayed in every facet, and he knows he needs to go back in that room and say, "All right, boys, what's the solution?" Because we didn't have a single answer for what they did in game one.
I wonder how much this is now. The Phoenix Coyotes are no longer the, hey, it's cute, the Coyotes are winning. Aw, they won a series. Those plucky little Coyotes. Now they're like a team that's all of a sudden being taken seriously by everybody. And for the first time in maybe the franchise's history, Wish, when you really go back to it, this team is playing with the weight of expectation. Because before, there was zero weight of expectation. No one was watching, for one hand. And on the other hand, that is a pretty big one. On the other hand, you know, no one expected them to do anything. And even if you bothered to have a look at the Phoenix Coyotes as assembled and what they were doing, the storyline is still focused on the sale or the non-sale, and no one can get past that. But people are getting past that. Fans are getting past that. Players are getting past that. And people are realizing this is a really good team in Phoenix right now. And
right.
I think we saw for the first time last night how the Phoenix Coyotes react to being, you know, not just that cute underdog, you know, counter puncher that somehow squeaks out victories. They are a good hockey team that deserves to be there. There's a lot. It's different when you play with that type of expectation on your shoulder, don't you think?
Oh, for sure. And I'm hoping that for the Coyotes' sake, that this ass-kicking in Game 1 turns them back into the underdog, turns them back into the team with no expectations because they were thoroughly outplayed in Game 1. But, yeah, you know, it's funny. It was a 4-2 margin of victory, right? But let's be honest here. It's a red line goal by Derek Morris and a perfect forced turnover for Met hitting Doughty, Doan out hustling Scuderi, and then right in front for the goal was Boddicker, I believe, right? Was Boddicker that
goal? Yeah, Mikhail Boddicker, yeah. Yep.
I mean, one fluke play, one perfect play, or else this game is the Kings running away. So that's the margin right now. The Kings come out Mike Smith in waves. Kopitar scores. Brown scores long distance on him a little bit. And the Coyotes needed one fluke and one perfect play to score on Jonathan Quick. I want the Coyotes to extend this series as long as they can for the sake of my pathetic postseason picks. I wouldn't mind if they won it. But last night did not encourage any confidence that they're going to be able to win this series against the Kings, who look like they're on another level right now.
You wonder how much the rest has helped, and of course the obvious answer is a lot, dummy, of course. Only played 9 games in the first 2 rounds, but they looked like a team that was well rested. Like when the Ottawa Senators back in 2007 had, what was it, like a week and a half layoff in between, when they finished up their conference final and they finally faced off against the Anaheim Ducks due to arena availability, plus, you know, Anaheim wasn't finished up yet in their conference final with the Detroit Red Wings. I mean, the Ottawa Senators just came out flat because they took that week and a half and essentially did nothing with it. Didn't recharge. You can actually make the argument they took a step back for various on and off ice reasons. But the Los Angeles Kings look like a team that said, you know what? We got a time to recharge here. We can plug our batteries in again. We can rest and we can come out even hungrier and fresher than we were before. And you saw it, Wish, you saw it from the opening faceoff. Winning every battle, more physical, out hustling in every, man to man, outside of Mike Smith. The LA Kings won every single contested inch of the ice, did they not? Like every single moment where you saw a confrontation between a Coyote and a King, it was a King that was coming in. Wherever you saw some piece of ice contested, a puck back, whatever, it was the Los Angeles Kings that were the hungrier and more refreshed team. And they just looked like they were ready to go. They didn't take this layoff and say, hey, party time, conference finals coming up. So boys, mind your P's and Q's. That stands for pints and quarts. Put them down. Make sure you get your rest. Make sure you get your nutrition. The bigger test is on the horizon. They look like a team that handled their time off perfectly.
for a team that, by the way, you've in the past said is one of the slowest in the league. It's like watching the contestants on The Biggest Loser do a 40-yard dash. But they got to every puck.
They did. They were hungry for it. They were. They worked hard. Listen, they're not fast. They work hard. They're a hard-working team. And it goes right down the lineup. I mean, look who they have on the ice in the last minute to protect the lead, right? Dwight King, who ends up getting the empty netter. Trevor Lewis is out there. Jared Stoll is out there. Like, they're getting great hustling performances from everybody. And they just outworked Phoenix. Like, that's all it was. It was a team that's like, okay, listen, we're not going to let our lack of speed get in the way of out-hustling everybody. And you can outwork someone and still be slower than them. And that's what the Los Angeles Kings did. Can they do it again in game two? I don't know, but they got what they wanted. They got a split. And now you can see because they lost at home, the Coyotes are in trouble.
One of the things I love about this postseason is the fact that of these four teams, you've got four guys that are so playing beyond what they were in the regular season. Like, you know, up their game, raise the bar, whatever the hell you want to call it. But Shane Doan is skating at a different speed and destroying anything he possibly can. Dustin Brown looks like some other guy named Dustin Brown, the Kings drafted first overall and developed, and all of a sudden he became eligible for the playoffs because he's been ridiculously good for the Kings.
You know what? But I don't think it was just the playoffs that did that. Like, Dustin Brown had a rocket attached to his back the minute the trade rumors started. Remember that was the game against Chicago where he got the hat trick? Like, the minute that Dustin Brown said, oh, hold on a second, you mean leave Manhattan Beach? What? I love it. Like, players, ask anyone, when you play in Los Angeles, you love it, and you don't want to. It's great in Los Angeles. Like, you think Wayne Simmons wanted to go? He said all the right things about going to Philadelphia. You think he wanted to leave Manhattan Beach? Wish. Come on.
And
he wanted to leave
Manhattan. And that's why.
Not a freaking chance.
That's why next trade deadline, if they're both there, Doug Wilson needs to call Darren Drager at the trade deadline and say, Blue Horseshoe loves Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton. And get the trade rumors going as fast as he can. Get those guys out there. They'll both do the Dustin Brown. Like, what? No golf? No beaches? No! And then the Sharks will win the cup. Two things real quick before we rock and roll over to our guest du jour, who I think needs to be hopping on soon. You mentioned the rest in the playoffs, and obviously the Devils have a little bit more rest than the Rangers do. So we'll see how they come out. The Flyers had rest before they played the Devils, and the Devils blew them out of the rink for a good portion of the series. But as you know, the Rangers have played heavy hockey. You've mentioned this on many occasions. And heavy as you know, Jeff Merrick, historically, going all the way back to 1994, 18 years ago, when the NHL changed its playoff format in order to help the Rangers win the Cup, as we all know. I mean, they're in the tank for the Rangers. There has not been a team that has gone seven games in its first two series and then won the Stanley Cup. And John Tortorella was asked about this today in his extraordinarily brief press conference, to which he said, what, Jeff Merrick? It's crap. That's what he said about that stat. He just said, it's crap. So I thought that was really good.
Well, what's he supposed to say? What's he supposed to say? Yeah, that's almost my favorite question that gets asked at press conferences. Are you concerned your team is peaking too early? And man, I'll tell you, man, if I was a head coach, I'd say, you know what? That is a concern. So starting tomorrow, we're tanking games. I'm going to choose. Like, what's the option? You tell a team to start, guys, whoa, stop all this winning. We're peaking too early. Let's start losing now.
Pull it out, think of baseball, and put a condom on. We're trying to win a cup here. The last thing I wanted to say about the Kings Coyotes series is this. Radim Vrbata tore up the Kings in the regular season. Tore them up good. Real offensive force against the Kings in the regular season. Not a single sniff for Vrbata and Hanzel and Whitney in last night's game one loss. They started off against the Richards-Carter line, couldn't handle it. Tippett used the last change, tried to get him away from Carter Richards. They still couldn't get anything going. Toast if that line can't get going against Los Angeles Kings, given what the Kings are throwing back at Phoenix. I don't know what the solution is. The other thing is that they don't have anybody to handle the Kopitar line. And Tippett was asked about it in the post game and didn't really offer an answer. Dude, I know you're going to say one game does not make a series,
That
was some lopsided ice, dude. That was some lopsided ice.
I want to go to Los Angeles here quick.
Sure.
The mark of a great player is how quickly you can park a mistake. Like how quickly a mistake shows up in your rearview mirror. And as you proceed forward, it gets more and more in the distance. The 100-footer by Derek Morris yesterday on Jonathan Quick. How quickly did he park that? Like, that is a piece of my history. Dust yourself off. Move along. Nothing to see here. Like, it didn't affect any part of his, no shaken, none of it. That guy is so comfortable in his skin, and playing at such a top level right now. Not just physically, but as you've seen with that 100-footer last night from Morris, psychologically. Because how many times have we seen, and of course, Dan Cloutier is the obvious example with the Lidstrom slap shot. How many times have you seen goaltenders just crumble when the 100-footer goes in? And it happens, a misread, maybe a skip on the eye, who knows, right? But it just affects you psychologically. Jonathan Quick, not a chance. No way. Didn't affect him at all.
True dat, sir.
All right.
For, well, you know. Here he is. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's bring him in. First off, we have to play his intro music, so hit it, Elena.
Yeah, it's good times. Dude's got his own intro music. How much do you love this, though?
By request, we are introing Dave Lozo to the NWO theme from back in WCW days.
It was actually Vasilios Banturakis who hit us up on Twitter and said, can you bring Dave in on some NWO music? Hell yeah, we can! How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing good. I have no idea what the NWO music is or how it pertains to me, but let's do it. I'm all for it.
I think it's because all of our listeners are Dave Lozo for life. Is the way it is. That's the way it works, sir. It's dedication.
I would have been more cool with NWA because that was kind of my thing back then. But you know, hey, whatever the listeners want, I'm all for it.
Where did you grow up, Lozo? Right. Lozo, where did you grow up, by the way?
Harrison, New Jersey. Which is right between Newark and Jersey City, basically. For those who aren't from around here,
how close is
that?
Is that still
Central New Jersey or is that North Jersey?
No, it's North. It's Hudson County. It's right there. It's like 10 minutes from the city.
I've learned something, Merrick, while doing this gig, which is that when I talk about where I grew up, which I consider to be Central New Jersey, which is nestled between North Jersey and South Jersey, basically Rangers country and Flyers country, I consider like the beaches to the Outer Bridge Crossing, or maybe Great Adventure to the Outer Bridge Crossing to be Central New Jersey. I've been told time and time again, that's fiction, that there is no Central New Jersey, that I'm making something up. And so now I feel like a man without a country. Quite frankly, after being educated by all the Jerseyites to tell me that where I thought I lived doesn't actually exist. New Brunswick? New Jersey. That's Rutgers.
Yeah,
we claim Rutgers for our own.
I thought that was South Jersey. I thought that was South Jersey growing up until I was educated. So, yeah, I know what you're going through.
Oh, Christ. So you're saying I'm basically South Jersey. Does that mean I have to turn in my card and become a Phillies fan and call up WIP and talk about Donovan McNabb?
And then start saying things like phone and home and all that stuff. You have no choice.
Enough of this malarkey. All right, Dave Lozo, I have picked the New Jersey Devils in 6 games over the Rangers. Please tell me why I'm right.
Well, I have a feeling that you're wrong because I said Devils in 6 as well. So, sorry.
That's
out the window for you now, buddy. No, I think I'm with you because I just think that, you know, I understand that statistics don't mean anything once you take the ice and all that stuff, but at some point, I just think the Rangers are just gonna hit a wall because it's not so much that they've played 14 games through 2 rounds, but it's their style of play as well. But I think that it's just eventually gonna get to the point where they're gonna hit a wall and they're playing a fresh team, a team that forechecks, a team that's, you know, on the attack all the time. And, you know, they're playing 5 D-men, you know, Stu Bickel's playing 4 more minutes per game than I am. So I just think that over the course of the series, I think game 1 will probably be a pretty even game. I think the Rangers will still be riding that high from game 7, but I just think over the course of the series, I think the Devils are going to wear down the Ranger defenseman, and I think they're going to win the series in 6.
We saw it a couple of different times, you're right, Dave, in the Washington series specifically, and I think of Game 6, where the Rangers defense, you look at production or lack thereof, whether it's shot blocks or plus minus, whatever stat you want to keep, they have taken that proverbial step back. I look at this series and I say we're waiting for 2 things to start fading. 1, the Rangers defense. You can only have the whip on you for so long. And 2, aren't you waiting for Marty Brodeur to come back down to earth? I mean, we thought that Marty probably had 1 series left in him. Hey, he's got 2 series. Hey, he beat the Philadelphia Flyers. Good for him. But he has to come back down to being, you know, the aging Marty Brodeur eventually, right?
I mean, if you can get through the Flyers, who, you know, they have way more offensive talent than the Rangers do, I think you can do anything at this point if you're Marty. And I think 5 days off probably helps him more than anybody else on that team. I think if if the roles were flipped and the Devils were coming in after 2 7-game series and playing the Rangers, who just dispatched the team in five, I would tell you the Devils would lose this series in 4 or 5 games, because I would expect Marty to have, you know, 1 or maybe even 2 games where he kind of gives the game away. But ever since he's been pulled in that Florida game in game 3, his numbers have been right up there with guys like Quick and Lundqvist and Mike Smith. He's been lights out since then. So I think that if the Flyers had pushed that series a little deeper, I'd worry a little bit more about that. But I think that he's going to come in fresh. And, you know, I think even if he does struggle in one game, I think the Devils, you know, overall will be able to sort of, you know, wear down the Rangers and win the series. But, yeah, it's definitely – I think at some point you might see him have a hiccup in the series, but I don't think he's going to fall off the cliff by any means.
And I think it's real interesting that, you know, you think about the matchup between the Rangers' defense and what the Devils have done offensively. You know, even if the Rangers trot out the Girardi-Stahl duo, and let's say that DeBoer keeps Kovalchuk and Parise on the same line, there's been a lot of heroes for this team offensively. Zubris chiming in. Clarkson has played 2 dominant games. Henrique, obviously. Zajac. It seems like there's, like, more offensive depth here than anyone thought from the Devils. And as much as, like, Merrick and people are looking at Brodeur and saying, okay, when do the softies start? I'm looking at this offensive depth, and I'm like, okay, when does Clarkson go 7 games without a goal?
Well, you're a Devils fan, and you have that negative attitude, so you don't want to go in too positive and jinx it, so I understand that. But I think if Parise and Kovalchuk are on 2 different lines, I think that gives them, the Rangers, a lot of problems. And even besides that, even when you go beyond those guys, I think a big difference for me, and it's probably a really small one, and maybe it doesn't mean a whole lot, but, you know, throughout the course of the year, when the Rangers or when the Devils threw out their fourth line, it had Cam Jansen and Eric Bolton on it, and that might as well have just been, you know, just whatever they played. If that was 8 minutes of ice time, that's 8 minutes of completely useless ice time. And now that they're using, you know, Steven Gionta, and they have a fourth line that can actually, you know, do things with Steve Bernier, you know, it's almost like when you play poker where, you know, the playoffs are so tight, all you want to do is kind of be on the right side of the odds as long as possible. So over the long haul, you know, you will be a winner. And when you have four lines like the Devils have, I think that when you keep rolling them out there and you keep getting a little something from all of them, that helps you out in the long run. And, yeah, I mean, you know, you play the Capitals, and if you have Ovechkin and Backstrom on the same line, it's really easy. You just throw Girardi and McDonough out there, it's no problem. But when you have Parise and Kovalchuk, and if they're playing on separate lines, mm-hmm. and you have the depth the Devils have offensively, which, yeah, I don't think any of us thought they were going to have this, you know, a month ago. I think that's going to give the Rangers problems. Yeah.
By the way, don't confuse my inherent cynical worldview for trying to be jinx-proof, okay? I'm just a sad, sullen little man, is all I am.
I understand that you have to do the reverse psychology and say, oh, the Devils are going to collapse, and then when they win, you can be like, oh, wow, what a shock, I'm so surprised. I understand.
Nice try, Wish. Nice try, Wish. Hey, you know, Dave, no one's expecting line brawls off the opening faceoff, although some, no. Read yours truly, are hoping for it. How physical, though, do you think this series gets?
Oh, it's going to be. I think that, you know, when you can take out your aggressions, you know, every other game and, you know, fight somebody, that probably kind of lessens it a little bit. But now that you have no other way of going about setting the tone, I think you're going to see the hitting just be out of control in this series because, you know, it's pretty funny how through 6 regular season games, you can talk to any guy in any team. You know, David Clarkson will tell you how much he hates Brandon Dubinsky. Dubinsky will tell you how much he hates Ryan Carter, and so on and so on. And all of a sudden, we're on the eve of the Eastern Conference Final, and everyone's just sort of like, well, you know, that doesn't really mean anything. You know, we're just going to go out there and play. Well, no, you hate these guys, and you're going to go out there, and you're going to try and put them through the glass. And I think in terms of that, in terms of intensity and bitterness and chippiness and all that stuff, I think you're going to see probably one of the most, you know, bitter, chippy series that you've seen probably in a long time.
You know, and to that, and, you know, there have been a lot of players, and actually even an entire team. Dick Irvin once pulled the Montreal Canadiens off the ice and didn't let them shake hands with the Detroit Red Wings back in the 50s after Detroit won the Stanley Cup once. But now it's a matter of form, and everyone has to do it. But at the end of this series, Dave, will this be the phoniest handshake alley we'll see all playoffs in 2012?
Well, you know what? Based on my hockey knowledge and insight, it's hard for me to interpret phoniness in handshakes. But, yeah, I feel like there's not going to be a lot of, you know, stopping to pat the shoulder and say, hey, good luck next round. I'll tell you that much. I thought yesterday, I thought that was pretty funny when Marty was kind of talking up Henrik Lundqvist yesterday, talking about what a great goalie he is and all that. But I guarantee you, if the Rangers win the series in 5 games, Marty's not going to stand there and say, boy, you're the best. I love you.
Yep. moving over to the Capitals, you covered them a bit during the playoff run. Did the Hunter news surprise you today? And if you could prognosticate who a good coach might be for the Capitals now that Hunter is out of the equation, who might it be?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I'm not around that team all the time, but yeah, you talk to the guys on that beat and everyone kind of got the idea that, you know, once the playoffs ended, pretty much no matter what happened, Dale Hunter was probably going to be out the door. He probably wanted to go back to Monday Nights and coaching junior. But I think it would have gotten a little more complicated how they have won game seven, because at that point you take the Capitals to the Eastern Conference final. How do you just, you know, let Dale Hunter go? But yeah, right. we were actually kind of in the press room today just going over names and throwing names out there, like, you know, Paul Maurice, Ron Wilson, you know, Michel Therrien and all these guys. And it's just, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the Capitals would want to do. I don't know if they'd want to go and grab somebody from junior who's more offensive minded and sort of get back to that. But as boring as those Caps games were down the stretch, they were winning that way. And if they can find a coach that can sort of continue on with what Dale Hunter had there, I mean, I don't know who the best guy would be for that. But I think that the players all bought into what Dale Hunter wanted to do. And if they can find somebody who can sort of, I guess, sell the same sort of product to that team going into next year, I think they'll be better off for it. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it's just a lot of retreads. And, you know, in terms of guys who are coming up to the ranks, I'm not sure who would be the best fit there, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, nor do I, Dave, but it would be a really cool NHL universe if Dale Hunter was like the ultimate coach fixer. He came in on 6 month contracts to fix teams, and then he was gone, rides out in the wind back into the London Knights organization of the OHL.
I love that idea, because he kind of looks like Harvey Keitel a little bit. Like, it reminds me of Keitel's character from Pulp Fiction when the wolf comes in and cleans up the blood in the car.
Yeah, or like in Reservoir Dogs. Okay, now let's go get a taco. You know, Hunter is one question there, of course, for the Washington Capitals. That's been answered today. The other question that needs to be answered is, what happens next with Alexander Semin? Do they re-sign him? Does he go to the KHL? Or does he become the booby prize, I suppose, for, sorry, Wish, whomever doesn't land Zach Parise this offseason?
You
know what? I don't know if he would come back to Washington at this point, or if they would want him back. I mean, he just hasn't grown. He hasn't changed the player. It's the same thing every single year with him. There's just, mm-hmm. you know, the flashes of brilliance. There's the stupid offensive zone penalties. And, you know, he was one of the guys who, I have to admit, he did play better defensively under Dale Hunter. But, I mean, it's not as though this guy is a franchise type of offensive player. And, I mean, if the Caps brought him back, I would imagine they'd bring him back for way less. And, you know, the KHL, if I had to guess, I would say the KHL would probably make the most sense for him. I think he can go over there and make a ton of money, you know, play the way he wants to play, and there won't be any sort of pressure over there. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what team would really be coveting, you know, Alexander Semin. He's kind of fallen into that sort of like Alex Frolov sort of like, you know, mentality or reputation, where I don't think teams are going to be throwing a lot of years at that guy. But, you know, the heck do I know?
And the great thing about Semin over in the KHL is that he automatically becomes their best goaltender. Which is odd, right? But my last question for you, Dave Lozo of NHL.com. Conn Smythe watch, who is your guy right now? Who is the leader, in your opinion, for ye old MVP award?
Well, I picked Mike Smith, and I still kind of stick with it to the halfway point. I put Jonathan Quick and Dustin Brown probably in that little 2-3 range. But, you know, as everyone wants to, you know, sort of think of Phoenix as this team that, you know, they collapse five guys back and, you know, they block all these shots and everything. I mean, Mike Smith's facing like 40 shots a game in the playoffs, and he's been fantastic. And I know they're all not the best shots in the world, and some of them are from the outside, but still, their teams are just throwing the puck on net nonstop on this guy, and he's won 4 overtime games. And, you know, Phoenix is not where it is right now, you know, without him, and they're not where they are right now probably if they still had Briz. You know, all those comparisons to him and Briz and all that, but, I mean, he's taken them further than Briz ever did. So I just think that right now it's him, you know, Jonathan Quick and Dustin Brown kind of in the secondary, Henrik Lundqvist as well. And, you know, it's going to be great. It's going to be great when the Devils, you know, they get to the Stanley Cup final and, you know, Ilya Klobuchar has 19 points in 16 games and nobody wants to give him any credit. But, you know, he's meant a lot to that team. He's a big reason why the Devils are where they are right now. But I kind of lean towards Mike Smith right now.
Last one from this little corner, Dave.
Yes.
LA Kings Twitter feed moments ago, hashtag NHL13 cover fact. Claude Giroux has manned a T-shirt cannon at a Nickelback show, comma, Kopitar has not. Vote Kopitar. Wow. The Los Angeles Kings easily have the most entertaining official Twitter feed. Do you see more teams doing this? Or do they stick with the very traditional, hey, David Clarkson's going to be at the mall today signing autographs? Where's your sort of thermometer on this one?
I mean, to me, it's not as though, like, I'm pretty sure anyway that the league can't really make them do what they want with their Twitter. I'm sure if the Kings were, you know, saying things like, you know, the Calgary Flames stink, I hope they fold or move their franchise, they'd probably get a little letter. But I think if they're just being, like, funny, if they're just, I mean,
nice
I, like, seriously, I've, I'm at the point now where, I mean, I follow maybe like four or five like team feeds, and if any big news happens, it'll get retweeted and I'll see it. But most of them are like that. It's just like, hey, you want to come down to the mall and have ice cream with P.A. Parento? Come click on this link. And I'm like, no, I don't want to click on this link. I love what the Kings do. I mean, they make their play-by-play interesting. They have funny tweets. I am all for teams doing that. The Columbus Blue Jackets were pretty good at that, too, this year at one point. So, yeah, I think that if the Kings can pull it off and, you know, they don't get any, you know, blowback for it, you probably will see more teams do that. It's good. It's fun. It's interesting. That's what you want.
Do you know who's behind it? Like, who's the guy or gal that's behind, who's actually doing the tweets? Because he or she is freaking hilarious.
No, I have no idea who it is. But, yeah, that person really – I want to find out who that person's real Twitter feed is and start following them. It's that good.
Yeah. All right, Dave Lozo. Central Jersey represent. By the way, P.A. Parento cannot have ice cream unless it's given to him by John Tavares. And we will talk to you soon, sir. Nice. Have
all
fun
right,
watching the Devs and Rangers in this Central Conference final.
Thanks, Dave.
Have a good one.
The great Dave Lozo.
Hey, here's an interesting from, speaking of, Central Jersey, Kevin, because I know nothing about the geography there, so, this is all news to me. This is all new information. Kevin Cronan, great last name. No one acknowledges us in Central Jersey, but I assure you it exists. North says we're south. South says we're north. What is it, Wish?
Well, I'll tell you exactly right now. Here's Emily writing in. BS is what she says about the lack of existence of Central New Jersey. I'm from Freehold, solidly located in Central Jersey. I grew up like three towns over from Freehold. I agree. Down the Great Adventure, up to the Outer Bridge Crossing, that is Central New Jersey. We are a glorious enclave of commuters and beachgoers, lovers of art at the Garden State Arts Center, or whatever the hell they call it now, and, of course, thrill ride enthusiasts at Great Adventure. That's Central New Jersey. Central New Jersey, come to our beaches. It's my little theme song for Central New Jersey.
Let me ask you about the LA Kings Twitter feed. I got tipped off to that last one just as the podcast was going by one of our listeners, Mariana Moroda, who tweets in from Northern Michigan, said, hey, another great tweet from the LA Kings official Twitter site, hashtag Nickelback. Where are you on that? I mean, I love it, right? I think it's fantastic. I think most people are on the same page about it. Do you see more teams doing that, more personality-based?
Well,
Twitter feeds.
The other team that's doing it a lot is the Blue Jackets Twitter feed, where like their guy gets on during the day and goes back and forth with fans. I think it's awesome, and I thought that the criticism of the Twitter feed from the Kings during the series against Vancouver was stupid, because like it's not the unbiased news source for the team.
No.
It's to me, when I read a Twitter feed from a team, I understand that there's going to be some pertinent information coming my way, but I also understand there's going to be some entertainment coming my way. Why? Because I see the Twitter feed the same way I see the friggin' Jumbotron at the arena. It tells me information that I need, and then it speaks to me as a partisan. So when a Twitter feed talks smack on the team playing the Kings, it's akin to the goofy video they make where the mascot is taking a poo on the team mascot from the other guys. You know, it's that kind of thing, but in digital form for me.
You see, and the one criticism that the Kings Twitter feed got right away with the Vancouver Canucks chirp, you're welcome. To the rest of Canada, you're welcome. It wasn't so much that it had to be an unbiased journalistic forum for disseminating and discussing and massaging information. It was that it is classless. And this from, you know, the very established people around the NHL who don't like when anything moves an inch to the right or an inch to the left. Oh, that's classless of the Los Angeles Kings. Someone should lose their job over this one. The reason I like it is it kind of feels like you're talking to Oz. There's no person there. This is the Los Angeles Kings. I mean, there's a person behind it. I don't know who he or she is, but he or she is pretty effing funny. But it's just the Los Angeles Kings Twitter feed. So it's kind of like that ignore the man behind the curtain, Wizard of Oz type effect, where you feel like you're being communicated something on a one-to-one level, because a lot of it's, you know, inside jokes for hockey fans, but you don't know who the person is. You have no clue who the person is.
Before we touch on,
I don't even know that
Todd...
I'd like to know.
I don't know if I'd want.
Exactly. It could be a robot for all we know. A sarcastic robot for all we know.
I like that.
Trash talking like robot for all we know.
I like that.
Before we get to Todd Richards and the Columbus Blue Jackets, some question of the day answers. Question of the day: give a name give a name to the Final Four conference finalists 2012 playoffs. You know, Frozen Four for NCAA, right?
Yeah.
Give a name to this one. For example, John Alcoff, three average goalies and Jonathan Quick.
Tyler Eves.
Three exciting teams and the New Jersey Devils.
They're probably the most exciting team, though.
He's just trolling. Oh, like I'm trolling, too. We're all trolling. All right. Bob Hall, the boring four.
Damn. Really? The boring
Jordan Beal, the no Ovechkin club.
Ooh. Jackson Stonehammer, which can't be a real name, but if it is, you just
totally
won the universe, Jackson Stonehammer.
Bettman's
bartering bits. So New Jersey is for sale. The Coyotes are for sale.
Oh, come on.
That's no good. I know.
And we're not for sale. We want someone to come in and help our guy out. That's all it is. No?
Luke Gill says you should rename the podcast Hockey Literature and You.
Perfect.
Hey, man, I read a lot of books growing up. I got an English degree, I got to put it to work somehow.
Lyle Brewster writes in, what separates the men from the boys final, is what he says. Dan Namar, four ways to make Philadelphia look bad. A, Devils win after making them look silly. B, Rangers say, really? You thought you were going to be number one? Get serious. We're the New York Rangers. C, Phoenix, how is Briz working out for you? D, dry island my ass, bitches.
Matt Richards, did you do this one, the Flyerless Four?
Yeah. Ray Ballinger, the 6-hour bus ride for 6 hours by bus from LA to Phoenix, 6 hours by bus to New York City to New Jersey just because of traffic. That's pretty funny, actually. A little Lincoln Tunnel humor on this Monday.
Yeah. Graham Mateer, NHL ratings versus NHL finances. This one could be feast or famine. If LA and New York make it in, bonanza for NHL. New Jersey, Phoenix, well, the opposite of what I just said.
Eric says, call the conference finals the bar, then Ovechkin and Green may actually make it there.
Ouch. Hey, man, there's a lot of other players that drink heavy. Come on.
What do you think of this Patrick Kane stuff, by the way? Now that we're on that subject. So Patrick Kane has become a... You didn't see the stuff on Deadspin?
Yeah, I saw all that. But then
the reconstruction
Larry Brooks was talking about yesterday in his column.
Oh, okay, really?
Chicago needs need to intervene. There needs to be an intervention done on Patrick Kane. He's, you know, Black Hawk gone wild. He needs to be controlled. Okay, I grew up in Canada, and I've lived here my entire life. And so I'm surrounded by hockey players. Like in the summer, there are various, you know, bars, that you go to, and there are hockey players that I've seen my entire life behaving exactly how Pat Kane has been behaving lately, only this time it finds its way to the internet. To me, from my experience, listen, I go up to, you know, Muskoka's, which is a cottage area a little bit north of the city here, where a lot of guys have cottages. Lindros and Corson and Tucker and Jeff O'Neill, a bunch of dudes have cottages up there. And it's party time when the NHLers get together. To me, I didn't see anything different in how Pat Kane behaves in the off season with having a couple of drinks than I've seen any other hockey player. The only difference is there's cameras around. Explain it to me, because I don't get why this is a big deal. I really don't, because this is just how hockey players behave in the off season. From
I've seen, I've experienced.
It sucks for the team.
It's up to the team. If it's up to the team to determine whether this is a detriment or not. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it's a 23-year-old kid blowing off steam after his season's over. Yeah. It's not like he's in training. He decided not to go to Worlds. It's his prerogative. And his greatest sin is not understanding, as most people his age do not understand, that everything you do could be chronicled by a cell phone. You know? So he didn't get arrested, which I think is, you know, where the bar is for Patrick Kane. I think he's cleared it then. It's embarrassing, sure. I guess it's embarrassing for the team, but I just don't think, you know, I've seen this intervention thing from Brooks, from other people, from a columnist in Chicago. Why? I mean, unless you can prove without a shadow of a doubt that his drinking affects his play during the regular season, why?
He's like most hockey players, like in the history of the NHL. Like, this is what guys do. This is what young men, regardless of whether you play in the NHL or not, this is what young men do with their downtime. Go out and get barbecued. It happens.
Yeah.
He just happens to be a member of the Chicago Blackhawks, and for that, some people want to hold this 23-year-old kid up to this almost impossibly high standard. I don't buy it. I don't buy it, and I don't see why it's a big deal. I really, unless to your point, it is affecting his play, and I haven't seen it affect his play. I haven't. You know, did he have a great season? No. I'm not going to say it's because he was out, you know, hounding and working skirt all the time. Not a chance.
Working skirt. John Cazera, what are you chowing down on, Wyshynski? Nothing. I have a head cold. So if it sounds like I...
Yeah, what happened to you? What happened? What's wrong?
This thing's been lingering for a bit, and then with a child's birthday party this weekend, it was a stressful time, and yeah. And I think it helped develop a little bit more. So that's just the way it is. It is what it is. Before we go, Todd Richards today named the head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Now, as I wrote on Puck Daddy this morning, I have never seen a coaching hiring that is such equal parts symbolic of sort of optimism yet frustration. You know what I mean? Like, it's great that they're stability and instability would be the words I'd use. You know, stability because the second half of the season where Richards was the interim coach, they played better. They found some leadership in Jack Johnson and Wisniewski, while the Rick Nash thing was overshadowing the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yet at the same time, it's management not going out, getting a high-profile coach, paying him a bunch of dough, giving him a 3-year contract. It's a move within the organization, which again is a reminder that Scott Housen gets one more whack at the pinata before he gets fired.
Exactly. That's exactly how I read this. If you're a Columbus Blue Jackets fan that does not want Scott Housen as your general manager, you will not like this hiring. It clearly indicates that, to Wish's point, Housen remains in charge. Otherwise, they wouldn't have let him do the Jeff Carter deal. Otherwise, it wouldn't let him do the Todd Richards deal. And what this does is it spells once and for all. If you had any thought that Rick Nash was remaining in Columbus, extinguish it now. Because the fact that ownership allowed Scott Housen to re-up Todd Richards indicates he is staying, and we all know he cannot coexist and will not coexist with Rick Nash. That marriage is over. So, whether it happens at the draft, where I personally think it's going to happen, and Columbus could be the big show stealers out of everything, holding the first, you know, holding the, sorry, not the first, but the second overall pick, plus the Rick Nash card in their hip pocket as well. They could be the big movers come draft day. Or he gets moved in the summer. Make no mistake about it. Today's events indicate more so than ever that Rick Nash is gone from this organization. Maybe the first tip-off was when they announced the logo for the NHL All-Star Game last year. Hey, none of it resembled Rick Nash, or Rick Nash wasn't there at the press conference to announce the All-Star Game next year in Columbus.
Hint, wink, wink,
he ain't going to be there.
Three quickies on Patrick Kane before we go. Katerin writes in, I don't know if he really choked a girl, that's not okay. I agree, and I think that what you're basically saying, true or not, is that you're putting yourself in situations where people could take your photograph and claim that you were at a bar and there's no disputing all that stuff, and then build on that story, true or not, build on that story in a way that can really make you look like a terrible human being. And it comes down to whether or not you should be putting yourself in that situation if you're an NHL player. I'm someone who may or may not put himself in that situation sometimes, and thank God there isn't a camera there, so I can relate to Patrick Kane just trying to live his life. I do it at 35. He does it at like 23. So, you know, I give him the benefit of the doubt. Adrian, it's ridiculous. Not just hockey players who like to get smashed. People need to relax.
Yep.
And then Yao writes in, I don't hold Patrick Kane to an impossible standard. I just I hold him to be a decent human being who doesn't allegedly choke women.
That's the only thing I'm not cool with.
I know.
Going out and getting blitzed and doing, you know, dumb stuff and, you know, passing out in limousines. Okay, whatever. That happens. You're a kid. Just choking out women.
If that's
allegedly.
Allegedly.
Hey, by the way, total, complete 180. Sean Leahy just sent me the coolest thing ever. Sean Leahy just sent me a link and attached to it your Christmas present. Link to classicauctions.net. What do you think they have up there? Right now, highest bid, $200.
What's that?
Jay Shearer's 2001-2002 NHL referee jersey signed by 45 referees and linesmen. Oh, I'll tell you what, if wow. I, oh man, if I didn't have, you know, I had this is, it's $200. It'll go higher as, you know, there's 30 days left to bid on this thing. I had a real dad moment the other day. I was at the sports card and memorabilia show a couple of weeks ago, Wish, and I found this. Oh God, it was awesome. It was a Toronto Toros, hey WHA fans, a Toronto Toros cardigan worn by the Zamboni driver at Maple Leaf Gardens, okay? So you know those old cardigans the guys used to wear when they Zamboni the, fled the ice in blue? Uh-huh. Oh, it looked fantastic. It was $300. And I thought to my, I said, my first thought was, okay, what could I get for my kids with $300? Like I had that dad moment where, man, if it's just single Jeff, I'm buying this thing. I'm buying this thing and I'm wearing it every single day and I don't care how ugly everyone else thinks it is. I think it's awesome and I'm wearing it. But I had the dad moment. I had the, if I had $300, should I invest it in the kids' education or buy this kick-ass Toronto Toros cardigan? So I kept my money in my jeans and I'm looking at this Jay Shearer's NHL jersey thinking to myself, you know, my birthday's coming up in July. I never really treat myself to anything. And now right in the back of my head is, you can hear your kids downstairs right now as they're playing, right, Jeff? Should that be an indication that your kids are more important, that as much as you love Jay Shearer's, you probably shouldn't bid on this sucker? You have those moments, Wish? You have those moments?
I often have to play this role on the show, so I'll just do it. I have to cut through the bullshit. Will somebody please buy Jeff Merrick this stuff?
No.
For his birthday.
No.
He clearly wants one of the listeners to, or a collection of listeners to ante up, get him this item.
No.
Now he's doing the thing where he says, no. We all know what he wants. Can you please get him something for once? He gives you so much. Trivia, smarts, obscure references, every single day, 5 days a week, for free, no less.
Hey, I just found out.
Go get him this linesman jersey. It's all he wants in life.
And here's the trivia. I'll give you an exchange for it. You know who the first player to ever hoist the cup and skate around the ice with it was? Everyone thinks it was the Detroit Red Wings, and I think it was Sid Abel or Ted Lindsay, but he just pushed around on the table. I found out recently who the first guy was. Butch Bouchard of the Montreal Canadiens. In a funny moment, I got to find this video as well. Bouchard, and he just passed away not that long ago. Of course, thoughts and prayers to the family. His son played for the Habs as well. I remember the Stan Jonathan fight. So he grabs the cup off the table, and he starts skating around the ice with it, Wish. And a couple of NHL representatives are like, you can't do that! And they start chasing him around the ice, and they fall. They all sort of fall en masse as Butch Bouchard has got the Stanley Cup over his head. So for anyone that tells you it was Sid Abel or Ted Lindsay who grabbed the cup first and hoisted it above their heads, that is wrong. They pushed it around the rink on a table, and it was Butch Bouchard, the Montreal Canadiens, who was the first to do it.
That's sad because I think Lindsay gets the credit for that in most circles.
He pushed it around the table. Can you imagine that? Just think of the silliness of that right now. There's the cup on the table and Ted Lindsay grabs the table, doesn't lift up the cup, but just pushes it around, around the rink on this table.
Ted Lindsay, come get your cup on this table.
And push the table around the rink so everyone can have a look.
All right, everybody. Enjoy. That's the show for today, by the way. I am Greg Wyshynski, Yahoo Sports.
Oh, yeah. Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet. Back on the Hockey Central desk this evening with... who am I with tonight? Where's my sked? Oh, Nick Kiprios and Doug McClain this evening.
I will be watching Devils Rangers.
Yes.
Everybody, just keep this in mind that I may have a little fun with some of my Ranger friends. Don't take it too seriously. Don't be like the Rangers fan who earlier today called me the C word because I jokingly said that the Rangers play the trap. I know they don't play the trap. I was just trolling. So everybody, just calm down.
Are you going to be trolling Devil Tweeter tonight? Is that you going to be?
I probably might be.
What the F is that?
But again, when it comes to writing the story on the game, I am as critical about my team as anybody, and as I said in the past,
you know,
I begrudgingly like this Rangers team, the way they play, the personnel on the team. In many ways, I wish the Devils had some of those players. So it's not as if I despise the Rangers, much like I did when they were the Oilers back 18 years ago. I will, of course, be honest about my feelings, and you know where I stand. So let's some fun with this, shall we?
You just reminded me of the Simpsons episode where Krusty the Clown finds his dad, and Bart asks him, say, Krusty, you know, you're so sad, you're so lonely, do you think about your father a lot? He goes, oh, I miss him, I think about him all the time, it consumes my day, except when I'm at the track, then it's all business. That's kind of like you are right now with New Jersey Devil / Ranger trolling. But when it comes to the story, Wish, on Puck Daddy, you're all business.
All business. Wear my business socks. That's how you know it's business time.
Oh, hey, sir.
All right, everybody. Okay. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to Elena behind the glass. Thanks to the great Dave Lozo for hopping on to talk about the series. And we promise we'll have somebody Rangers-centric later in the week to balance out the extraordinary affection and love that comes to the Devils from one side of this equation. And
We should get Kevin Weeks, who's been on both sides. We should get guys that have been on both sides of the fence. Ranger.
No, I think it's only fair that we get like a serious hardcore Ranger lover to balance me out. Dancing Larry or Stan Fischler. You know, someone who really loves the Rangers.
Nick Fatiu.
Not Dave Maloney. He will not be joining us.
That ship has sailed.
That ship has sailed. Thanks, everybody, for listening again. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye. Thank you.